listening to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM with Scaffy, Lindsay, and with producer Shell. And today, if you're listening live, it's Thursday, the 20th of August, 2026. This is the second hour of our show. The first hour, we were covering the story of Queen Esther in the Book of Esther. And now we are going to be looking into some good news and some current news, including some recoveries of artifacts that have been taken from the Louvre Museum in France. So that's going to be Lindsay's story for us this morning. And we also have producer Shell giving us a brand new quiz question. So please, producer Shell, what's question number three for today?
Okay, question number three. What did Jesus bend down to do after the woman caught in adultery was brought before him? What did Jesus bend down to do after the woman caught in adultery was brought before him? We have correct answers in studio. How about you? Do you know this one? Text us in on 0491-064-669. Give it a shot. Tell us what you think that answer is. 0491-064-669. We're after, what did Jesus bend down to do after the woman caught in adultery was brought before him? You can find that answer in John 8:6 as well.
I'll tell you what he didn't do.
What didn't he do?
He didn't open a chocolate package.
Oh, bag of chips.
Yes. No, specifically chocolate. But we are going to be talking about chocolate today.
Okay.
We're going to have our interview with Dr. John Ashton, who is a food scientist. He just wrote a book called The Chocolate Diet and How to Eat Chocolate Without Feeling Bad About It.
I'm keen.
So if you have questions about chocolate, is chocolate good for you? Is chocolate bad for you? What do you do about chocolate? Today is the day that all your questions will get answered by an absolute expert.
I hope he's bringing in some coffees.
I know. Me, I was like, too. Is he coming in? Is he bringing us chocolate?
And is he bringing chocolate and the book? We want the book. And does the book come with the chocolate bar?
I specifically want the chocolate.
Is it an edible chocolate book? That would be the next level.
Oh,
imagine,
dear.
Like, every time that you read a page, you just like tear it, and then you eat it, and it's just like, tastes like white chocolate.
In Revelation, there's a book that John is told he should eat, and it's sweet to the mouth, but it's bitter to the stomach. So it was tasted like chocolate, but didn't feel like chocolate.
Later. I feel like the interviewer is going to also teach us ways that we shouldn't eat chocolate.
I don't know,
but it's a shell. I think you're throwing some spanners in my works here.
Yesterday, I ate green chocolate. It was Whitaker's Goody Goody Gumdrops from New Zealand. One of my classmates just came back from New Zealand and brought this.
You know what? There is a type of chocolate that I ate a while ago, and it was really nice. It was like red chocolate or ruby colored chocolate.
Ooh, yeah, they can naturally grow pink chocolate beans now.
Yeah. Is it nice? Yeah, it's really good. Well, we can ask all these questions to Dr. John. So prepare today. It's going to be a very chocolatey day for all you chocolate fans.
I feel like that statement was a bit of an oxymoron, though. What? They can naturally grow red beans now.
So
that means that they would have had to have modified them in some way in order to do it.
I don't know.
No, apparently it's naturally occurring.
Yeah, so
just very rare.
So they've obviously found some. Yeah, so either they're an ancient bean that has always been around, or else they've modified them. So it can't be.
No, but it can actually. Know what? In this world of modified foods, there's different ways you can modify. You can modify them
just
like genetically,
like selecting.
But yeah, but natural selection, just like how you get dogs, different breeds of dogs, you can do the exact same things with
plants. You don't have
to
go and gene modification technology and things.
Bananas. So that's a little bit of gene modification if you're doing that, but that's still.
You're not modifying.
Selective breeding.
Not artificially.
Selective breeding. According to the genes of them. Yeah.
That's right. For example, bananas. Bananas used to have
big seeds.
A lot of seeds.
Yeah, and they still do in some parts of the world. There's like over 300 different varieties of bananas. Yeah.
Plantains have seeds.
Some
in them.
Are only for cooking, some are for eating and milkshaking. Yeah. So,
but you know, I'm very glad that we get bananas with no seeds this day and age. It's amazing.
Alrighty.
Speaking of stealing things, what have you been reading about stealing stuff?
We weren't speaking about stealing.
You're stealing seeds from the bananas.
Nobody said anything about stealing.
Don't know if that segue quite worked.
That was an almost good segue, Steffi. Oh, we love you.
Okay. All right. Lindsay, tell me about people that are, artifacts that have been found.
Okay. Everybody by now should have heard about the Louvre heist that happened in October 19, 2025. There were four masked thieves that executed a brazen 7-minute daylight robbery. No,
wait, when was the date?
That was last year in October.
2025.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It was so that
nearly
recently.
A year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they stole 8 pieces of the French crown jewels from the Galerie d'Apollon, valued at approximately 88 million euros or $102 million.
It's probably worth more than that. I think that this is a number that's like really...
Anyway, that's what the Google tells me.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that this was one of the last, probably the last museum heist in a wave of museum heists in the months leading up to this one.
Oh, really? There was like a pandemic of museum heists.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
This, like, the Louvre should have known better by this point, honestly. Because there was about 4 or 5 different ones just in France alone, and even there's been one in Italy as well that I was reading about. So there was a heist at, what's this one? The National Museum of Natural History in France, and that was just a month before the one in the Louvre. They stole,
what did they steal? Like
they stole
bones?
Raw gold in its mineral state, which was worth 600,000 pounds or euros, sorry, 600,000 euros. And then at the Adrian de Boche Museum, I don't know how, I probably just
you debauchered.
Yeah, yeah, I debauchered it. They stole, what did they take? They took, I don't know, a bunch of stuff, but it was in the same weeks leading up to the Louvre incident.
Okay, so
as
it
well.
Was a thing that was happening a lot.
It was a thing. And then the Musée Lalique, I don't know if that's correct, but that was an overnight raid on a museum by a masked gang, and they stole 27 rare pieces of precious Art Nouveau and Art Deco jewelry and glass art, which was estimated at 4.5 million euros. There's a lot of stuff getting stolen. Louvre was just the tip of the iceberg. Wow. At this point. Musée de Paix Châtillonnais. Don't know if that was right or not. I don't speak French, guys, just in case.
Pardon my French.
Pardon my English. It was a daylight operation, 2 men posing as regular museum visitors bypassed security measures. They walked out with historic 2,500-year-old gold torque from the famous Vic's Grave treasure. That just like it keeps going. There's so many of them.
Just, well, casually robbing museums.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this one museum in Italy where the Italian police actually recovered some of the stolen artwork by Renoir, Cezanne, and Matisse worth millions of dollars.
Wow.
They're not going to tell us how or what leads they got, obviously.
These are big names.
But, like, at least a little bit was recovered, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, it's just fascinating to me because how are all of these museums getting robbed within the space of a couple of weeks and they're not letting the other museums know, hey, like, there's some robberies that just happened. Like, you should probably up
your security.
And with all of this taking place, some of the museums have discovered, oh, yeah, we've got, like, really outdated CCTV cameras. We're low on security stuff. Like, some guys literally just broke in through a window. So one of these, I don't know which one at this point after reading it all, but one of the museum break-ins, some guys stole a truck with a automatic lift on the side, which allowed the guys to get onto the lift and go up onto a balcony of the museum and get in using just angle grinders through the glass window.
I think that was the Louvre.
Was that
heist.
The Louvre?
I think so.
That was the Louvre heist. And they didn't have any armed, you know, guns or anything. They were just waving the angle grinders in the security guards' faces to get past them. Like, they were just using their power tools to threaten people. Like, you know what this makes me think of? This makes me think of the kind of attacks the human race has been suffering at the hands of Satan and demons for thousands of years.
How so?
Because, like, there has been so much loss and suffering and like, Satan is this prowling lion seeking for whom he may devour, and he's just trying to get at us in any particular way. But he doesn't have ultimate power. He's just getting away with it by waving power tools in God's face, right? Or in our faces particularly. Like, we're not actually standing up against Satan and the demons that are wreaking havoc and whispering lies into our ears. They're just stealing and killing and destroying at will as they desire, with no one standing up against them, with no one upping the security on, you know, our mental and spiritual strength to stand up against this. Like, if we just read the Bible more, if we spend time abiding in Christ, we have full security against Satan and his attacks, right? We don't need to allow these heists to be taken place in our own lives spiritually.
Yeah, I love that application. And you're right. Look, you know, particularly with Satan, he will find, like, you know, sometimes your front door can be really well locked.
Yeah.
But if you're leaving a window open, he'll just go through the window.
Exactly.
And Satan is trying to really get Christians or people in general through means that they never expect.
Mm.
And that's why, look, I have some friends that unfortunately have been attacked by, fell into some of the devices of Satan because they thought that they had it all, but then they were leaving some breaches in their armor.
Exactly.
You know, and they stop going to the church and they stop reading the Bible. They're not praying well. And before they know, boom, something happens. And they didn't even see it coming because their spiritual discernment was at an all-time low.
Exactly.
Just like these museums, instead of being on the alert, Jesus says, look, be on the alert.
Mm.
Be vigilant. Be watchful. Pray and watch. Watch is like, okay, it is an attitude of, hey, am I leaving any breaches for the devil in my life? Or am I, you know, everything that I, because every day God reveals new things for us to work on.
Yeah.
And if you walk in these things, we're safe.
There's a couple of things that I want to, I guess, hit on. What are some of the breaches in our armor or our security against the wiles of the devil? Some of the things that we listen to, whether it's music, certain types of music, we can think that certain things are even Christian music, but they might actually have been influenced by demonic devices. And it's really important for us to have spiritual discernment about the things that we listen to, because that's coming into our mind and it's opening doors to the enemy. Some of the things that we watch, and something that just came to mind was, like, I don't know, the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, like those kind of TV shows and stuff like that. People might be enjoying this, thinking it's harmless fun, but it's actually allowing a lot of immorality to be instilled into your mind. So I don't know what it might be that you find attractive or whatever, but even if you think it's harmless, it can be an open door for the enemy into your life.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
FM, and we have a quiz answer, don't we, Producer Shell?
I think we do. I think we all knew this one very well. So Jesus wrote on the ground with his finger was what we were wanting for our answer there. To what did Jesus bend down to do when the woman was brought before him?
Okay. And Shell, I have a question for you. What's all this chat happening about puns going on?
I've been sending out, you know, well dones to the people who get the quiz question correct. And yeah, the last two have had little puns in them.
Oh, really?
What little puns have you been including?
So the first one, the answer was lion. So I said, you guys aren't lying down on the job. And the last one was writing on the ground. So I said, you are right, but the wrong kind of right.
You know,
so the pun, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, if you're listening, if you want to get a hold of some of Shell's fun little pun responses, you got to text in and let us know what you're thinking so you can hear from her directly.
That's right. Text us in. We've got two more quiz questions to go in the next hour, so make sure you play.
And hey, we're going to be talking about some interesting things in a moment. You're free to let us know what you think. So, Scaffy, what are we talking about now?
All right, look, I want to share about a very interesting story. And the news about it, it's because it is a ministry that has just celebrated 25 years. And the story that I'm about to tell you is, it involves a retired couple from the American Midwest. So people that lived in Virginia, but they were born in Illinois. I do not know if Producer Shell knows that part of the U.S. very well, the Midwest, like Illinois. And
well, I drove through Illinois them. So many times. Yeah.
So look, this story is about this couple. They were retired already, They were in their late 60s and early 70s, like 69, 71 years old.
Okay, I got you.
But they cited something extraordinary. They were part of a Lutheran church group in the United States, and they decided to go on a mission trip in 1999 to Tanzania. Mm-hmm. And when they were there in Tanzania, they noticed that there's a lot of children with really significant physical disabilities. And so they were asking their tour guides and their hosts, say, hey, what future did these kids have? And the answer broke their hearts. They said, hey, no future really. And that really hit hard to that couple. It's Don and Joanne Tomey. And they felt so hard, and they had such a heart for these people that said, you know what, we have to do something about it. So they started a school, like a boarding school for children with disabilities in Tanzania. Now that school has, you know, hundreds of children. And even though they started that ministry when they were like in their 70s, in about 20 years that they were serving that ministry, they traveled to Tanzania 35 times.
Like into their 90s?
Yeah, into their 90s.
That's crazy.
So they died at, you know, in their early 90s. But every year they're going there and they're making it happen, making it work.
I love that, honestly. Like, I was just thinking earlier, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, you should retire, what, in your 60s and then mm-hmm. you probably die in your 70s, 80s or something like that. But I know people who live to, like, 120. Like, I know people mm-hmm. personally who have lived into over 100. Like, that's, like, an extra 40 years of life and, yeah. like, service that people can give absolutely. To the world.
They were retired already, and they're well into their, you know, in their 70s. They say, hey, God, you know, they said that this was a God moment that they had. And then they started the Faraja Fund. Because, look, it is expensive to maintain a school for 100-plus children yeah. with disabilities in Kenya where they can learn, they can have a future, they can learn a trade, they can be well taken care of, they can learn the word of God. So they started this fund called the Faraja Fund. Faraja was the name of the school. Faraja is the Swahili word for care, you know, for comfort.
Okay.
And they have to raise like over $300,000 per year. So not only you are there in Tanzania, like building the school, you know, and organizing the teachers and the well-being for the children, but when they came back to the U.S., they were engaged in raising funds every single year, over $300,000 per year to maintain that school. So that's what it is, a God moment that ended up becoming a lifelong ministry. And you know what? It didn't, they did really well the succession planning for that one, because even though Don passed away in 2020, Joanne died in 2022, well into their 90s, both of them, their sons, their grandchildren, and a network of more than 200 donors kept the school going through the Faraja Fund Foundation.
Wow.
Oh, so good. And his eldest son, David, is the CEO, the leader, the president of the board of the foundation, and he's doing that. And it's interesting to see how this is a story of faithfulness that it goes beyond generations, because Don's mother, Don was born in the 1920s. Don's mother already had a heart, and she had a ministry to support kids of Mexican immigrants in the United States.
Oh, wow.
And Joanne's mom, Joanne grew up with her mom looking after children with disabilities in the United States. And so they looked after kids with disabilities in the United States. As also, they came up with like seeing their parents giving them that example of service. And caring for others as well. And that now became, so it's three generations now in that family of caring for those who are the least advantaged in our societies, in our communities. So today, the residential school serves about 100 students at a time. It offers full primary education under the Tanzanian curriculum, room and board, physical occupational therapy, medical care, and vocational skills such as tailoring, carpentry, jewelry making, and computer skills. And it is the only residential primary school of its kind in the Kilimanjaro region that focused specifically on children with physical disabilities. The locals call it the Miracle by the Mountain.
Wow.
They have also now set up a little van that drives around and offers medical assistance and activities for over 2,500 children around the region as well. So now that's being led by their oldest son, David. And look, it's not solving the entire problem. In Tanzania, there's like hundreds of thousands of children that live with disabilities. Some estimates say that it's about between 600,000 and 750,000. But you know what? They're doing their part. So, you know, look, we can look after 100 of them. We're going to look after these 100.
Yep.
But much more needs to be done in that. And across Eastern and Southern Africa, the figure is about 29 million children living with disabilities that have little to no prospects of a future.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Only about 15% of Tanzanian children with special needs receive any kind of formal education. There's a lot of stigma. Sometimes these disabilities are seen as a curse or seen as the mother's fault. The fathers often leave the family and can't cope with the stress. Many rural children never see a doctor. And mainstream schools are overcrowded. Their staff lack training or accessible facilities. So it's not an easy thing, not an easy life that they have. Mm-hmm. But here we go. This elderly couple, well into their 70s, decided to do something for God. Mm-hmm. And look, that story reminded me of a passage in the Bible, particularly in the book of John 17, verse 12. This is a prayer from Jesus to his father. And says, "While I was with them, I was keeping them in your name, which you have given me. And I guarded them, and not one of them perished, except the son of perdition, so that the scriptures would be fulfilled." When Jesus is praying to God about us, he says, "Father, these people that you have given to me as a gift, now I'm returning them back to you." Jesus looks at us as if we were a gift. The Father sees us as a gift. He gives us as a gift to Jesus. Jesus transforms us and gives us back as a gift to the Father. So if the love language of the Godhead, of the Trinity, is gifts, guess who are the gifts?
We are
the gifts.
Interesting.
And it's a nice thing to think about it. And I think that when I look at that story, these elderly couple are looking at these children as their gifts that they can give to God. So we can also pray like Jesus, say, "Hey, Lord, all these precious people that you have given to my life as a gift, we have invested in them, we have loved them, and now we are returning them back to you now as our gift to you." So we are the gifts of heaven. We are the thing that God values the most. And looking at that example, I think, wow, man, that's fascinating. They transform that moment of pain, of suffering, of like really, you know, gut compassion for these children, and they could easily just have gone home and forget about it. But no, they decided to do something about it, and look what, you know, how God blessed. Now hundreds of people are involved, and hundreds of children have their lives absolutely changed and transformed to their ministry. This is the gospel in action.
So good. Yeah. So good. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Hope that you enjoyed that story. And what about you, radio friend? Do you have any charities, any missions that you are involved with? Or is there any experience that you had that really broke your heart and you're wondering, God, what can I do about it? Let us know what was that experience. We can pray for you. Maybe God wants you to take the initiative, like Don and John. And Joanne, who really gave their lives, poured their lives into that which they believe to be the work of their lifetime in Jesus.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
With Scaffy, Lindsay Shell, and we have here our guest for today, Dr. John Ashton. He is with us to talk about his book, The Chocolate Diet. How do we chocolate and feel great about it? Good morning to you, Dr. John.
Ah, good morning.
It's great to have you here. Tell us a little bit about this chocolate diet. Look, the cover is very enticing. There's a fork piercing through a strawberry that is dipped in chocolate. So a lot of people are wondering, what is this diet like? You just eat all the chocolate you want and you get skinny, or how does it work?
Yes, well, the title certainly, I think, misrepresents the book, but that was the title that the publisher chose. Yes, okay, and it is called The Chocolate Diet. The idea was, though, how can we genuinely do something in our diet, make a lifestyle change that isn't too drastic, that can help us lose weight? And the whole idea behind the book was that the polyphenols in chocolate, which are particular compounds in chocolate that are highly beneficial for us, can play an important role in weight loss in a number of ways. But most people like chocolate. And so the secret is that a little bit of chocolate, particularly dark chocolate, and I'm really talking about, you know, dark chocolate, 70% cocoa plus type chocolate.
Okay.
A small piece of that chocolate instead of a dessert will give you a much lower calorie intake. And so often people, when they feel similar, feel like something sweet. But by just having one small piece of chocolate after a meal instead of that piece of apple pie or those couple of biscuits or some other dessert will in actual fact give you a lot less calories. And the same goes for morning tea, you know, the traditional thing where you have a beverage and a couple of biscuits. When you do the calculations, there's less calories in a small piece of dark chocolate than in a couple of biscuits. And so it's just based on the maths, really, from that perspective. But chocolate, and particularly the cocoa polyphenols, have some interesting properties. So a study that was done in France where they took a cohort of women, probably from memory it was in the ages about 25 to 45, and they got them to smell some dark chocolate. They just—they weren't allowed to eat it. They had to just smell
just
it.
Just smell it. What a just torture.
Just smell it. Yeah. And what they found was that they ate less. So they were then allowed to go and have a meal and have whatever they wanted. And
really?
They ate less than the group of women who didn't smell the what? Chocolate beforehand. So that was quite an interesting finding. The other thing, of course, too, that has come out recently, that the cocoa polyphenols have, a lot of other benefits. They can, for example, help us lower our blood sugar, these sort of things. Possibly one of the best ways to get the cocoa polyphenols, though, is rather than eating a block of chocolate, which has some of the added cocoa butter added to it, so it does have the extra calories, is just to make yourself a drink using the cacao powder. So cacao powder is different to cocoa powder, which is treated, goes through a more high-temperature process. So cacao powder is just the raw chocolate powder with minimum heat treatment. And so the concentration of polyphenols in that is sort of slightly higher because less have been destroyed by heat. And just making a drink of take a heap teaspoon of the cacao powder, which you can buy in most supermarkets and health food shops, and then mix that with your favourite you can have it just with water or a little bit of oat milk. It makes a lovely chocolate drink or however you want to have it, and maybe sweeten it with a little bit of honey. But the idea, again, is the cooler the temperature you can operate at, the better. And the same with honey. If you can make your drink and then cool it down and then add your honey, and, of course, ideally raw honey, you get the benefit as well, a double benefit, because the cocoa will help, or the cacao will help with blood sugar control, and also honey itself is low glycemic index if it hasn't been heated too high. So honey has amazing properties as well.
That is amazing, Dr. John. Because look, I'm a chocolate fan myself. I do enjoy chocolate, and I know that. You know, sometimes chocolate gets a really bad rep. But what you're saying here is that you're talking about like the higher concentration of cocoa, like 70% plus, or using like the raw cacao powder to make a drink. And one of the things that I've noticed in my life is that if I have a smoothie with, let's say, soy milk and banana and some cacao powder, cacao nibs, and I just like blend that, it does give you that it removes that craving for something sweet, And at the same time, it's something that is good for your body. But what about that idea of smelling cacao before meals? Is that something that people do to try to lose weight? Is that one of the tips?
Oh, no. No, that was just a scientific experiment that was done to where they were exploring some of the benefits.
Yeah,
so right. Obviously, if you're eating the cacao powder, you're going to be getting a much higher concentration of these polyphenols compared to just, you know, smelling them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also there are effects, you know, on the brain as well. So the brain affects the release of certain hormones that control satiety, control hunger and so forth. So obviously it seems that these polyphenols affected a response in the brain. That helps, control diet.
So what kind of chocolates actually are the villains or should we avoid? Is there a thing? Because I'm sure that some of the chocolates are so full of fat and sugar that they're not going to help anyone too much in their weight loss, particularly if you're eating too much of them. So how should we choose a good chocolate? What are some of the pitfalls to avoid?
Yeah, so that's a very important question. So when we look at a high-quality chocolate, it will be a mixture of some cocoa butter, which is the natural fat that has been extracted from the chocolate. So they separate out the chocolate and the fat. And so this fat, actually, that comes in the cocoa powder, is a mixture of different fatty acids, and essentially they're good for us. Part of them is a saturated fat, but it's a saturated fat that our body converts into a monounsaturated fat. So it doesn't have the same negative effects of other forms of saturated mm-hmm. fat. And saturated fats too, and the right sort of fats are actually good for us. They help strengthen our cell membranes and so forth. So we ideally don't want a totally fat-free diet. A little bit of fat is good. And the fat in cocoa is a good type of fat. Now, a lot of chocolates that are made and they're called compound chocolate. They're made by using other vegetable fats
mm-hmm.
and sometimes hardened fats. So they are definitely the ones to avoid because they've got the wrong sort of fat. Now, in the high-quality chocolates where they're just the cocoa butter and the cacao and some sugar, a small amount of sugar, you know, that's fine. But most of the – when we're talking about 85% 70% plus cocoa chocolates, that's very high when we consider that, according to the food regulations, I think to label it dark chocolate, it only has to be above about 40% cacao. So that's a lot lower, and yet people say, oh, it's dark chocolate, must be good for us, but really it's only got about half the cocoa polyphenols that you are getting the benefit from. So it's actually much lower. If we go to a milk chocolate, that might be typically only about 10%
oh, really?
Of
wow.
cocoa. So it's quite low. And then, of course, you've got the milk powder as well. And it's quite fascinating with, for example, dairy. A lot of people have thought that, you know, the fat in dairy is the bad one, particularly for atherosclerosis. But it's interesting, the research shows that the type of protein, the type of casein that is in our common milk varieties that we use now, the A1 beta casein, is actually quite highly atherogenic, whereas the beta casein, which you get in the A2 milk or in goat milk or in the old Jersey cow milk, that's not atherogenic to anywhere near the same extent. So the milk powder, of course, that you're going to find in most chocolate is going to be the typical A1 milk powder.
Wow.
So a lot of little subtleties like this, and I find it quite fascinating, you know, like the Bible talks about how goat milk is health for your maidens and this sort of thing. And, of course, the use today of the A1 milk as a result of intensive breeding of the Friesian cows and so forth, yeah.
That's very fascinating. Look, but yeah. the book is really about a sustainable way towards weight loss. And I'm looking at the table of contents here, and it's saying, like, you know, why it can be hard to lose weight, how can we train our body to burn fat, weight control is about balance, and so on. So it looked a very down-to-earth approach to losing weight, particularly now that we're living in an age where the GLP-1 drugs are so popular. But then there's also all kinds of health freaks associated with them. I'm interested in asking about this chapter about how can we train our body to burn fat. What is that entails?
Right. So this is where, people have talked to me and said, look, you know, I do all this exercise, but I'm not losing weight. And I think it's very important to maximize weight benefit. You need to, if you're doing exercise, do exercise for more than 40 minutes. And the reason is that if you do exercise less than that, you're just going to burn energy stored as blood sugar in your system. Mm. But if you can do exercise for a longer period, right, more than the 40 minutes, then your body will switch over and start burning the fat. And so if you're doing exercise, you know, for a short period and then you eat, you've just replenished your blood supply. You're not getting anywhere. And that's why often you see most cyclists are quite thin people. And that's why, because most cyclists just don't go out and, you know, ride for half an hour. They ride for several hours. Mm-hmm. They do it for a long period of time. And so that's the secret there. It's sort of, and I use an analogy in the book there, that if you're driving in a car and you've got your fuel tank and you've got a jerry can of extra fuel in the back, right, which is adding weight to your car, and you drive along and you use 2/3 of the tank of petrol and then you fill up again, right, you've still got the same weight in the car because you've still got your jerry can. But if you drive to the point where you've used up all your fuel and, oh, the gauge is near on empty, I've got to tip the fuel out of the jerry can in, and you use that, the car's now lighter because you've used that, right? Burn that up. And so over accumulated time, and that's why, for example, when I used to run and jog, not so much now, I still do my walk jog, is to do it before breakfast and to make sure you're doing it for that longer period of time. Try to do an hour or so if you can fit it in, and it doesn't have to be. You might do a 40-minute run and then, say, 20 minutes of sort of weight-bearing exercise, this sort of thing. Or do gardening. You know, it doesn't have to be some other thing. Mm-hmm. Get up in the morning, get out, do your gardening, take the bins out, whatever it is. Do quite a bit of exercise before you have breakfast, because, again, that will give you a shorter time. You've been fasting overnight. A shorter time, your body will switch to fat burning.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm. This is some fascinating information, Dr. John. And look, I'm wondering, is that book of yours available? Can people still find it online if they're interested in...
Oh, yes, it's still in print, available like Amazon.com or any bookseller can get it in. The co-author, Lily Stojanowska, is a world authority on women's health. And we had a PhD student who was a brilliant dietitian. She actually worked out a meal planner. So in the back of the book, there's actually a meal planner where you can go through and work out a whole series of meals, all different types, both vegetarian, non-vegetarian meals, to take you through a weight loss program. There's also a section on weight loss for children, what to do if your child is putting on weight, and how to deal with separate issues with children's weight loss.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.